Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special T20 World Cup themed episode of the podcast is none other than founder of Cricket Fanatics magazine and one of my good friends here in the world of cricket Twitter and cricket media in general, Mr. Khalid Mohiuddin. So Khalid, first things first, bro, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast tonight. It's a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things T20 World Cup and cricket in general. Have to ask, how's your day been so far, mate?
It's been good. Very quiet after the World Cup. I first have to congratulate you first and foremost for saying my name, right? That was excellent. A lot of people do that, actually get it spot on, so well done. We'll work on the kh sound a little bit later, but you got it almost 90% correct. So yeah, my day's been pretty calm today because obviously after South Africa, I don't want to say crashed out of the World Cup because we didn't really crash out, but after the disappointing end to the World Cup, even though we won the last game, not being in the semi-final was heartbreaking for a lot of us because we're really hoping that this team would be the team to take us forward. So I had a little bit of a quiet day. I did, however, on our daily show on YouTube, I did interview Patty Kruger, though. So it was the last day of the four-day series, of course, a lot of draws again, only 2 wins in the Division One. So I got an opportunity to chat to Patrick Kruger, who's an all-rounder for the Knights, and it was excellent to talk to him and get some insight. He actually eased into the conversation slowly but surely and gave some excellent advice at the end that he didn't actually realize was great advice. So I had a great end to the day, I would say, rather than just having this a calm day for the rest of the day. So yeah, it was good for me. And how was yours?
All good, mate, to be honest. Yeah, very good. Had Josh Shaw on the podcast today from Gloucestershire. Very, very nice guy. Cannot wait to release the episode. Listeners, trust me, that is going to be an absolute banger. It's absolutely fantastic. Really, really funny guy. Very nice guy as well. And yeah, other than that, just been watching the mighty Namibia take on India. It's been a very, very memorable World Cup, I must admit, for the Eagles. And we'll talk a little bit more about them and Scotland as the podcast progresses. But Khalid, before we go into the main chunk of today's episode, I did allude to it beforehand, Cricket Fanatics magazine. Now, this is a platform which listeners, you can see me on as well. I do come on for the occasional show and have been doing since 2019 from the England-South Africa series. So, Khalid, if you just could, just explain to the listeners out there what exactly Cricket Fanatics magazine is and what you provide for South African cricket fans.
It's funny, actually, because a lot of people don't know that we are multi-publishing digital platform. So we don't only have a YouTube channel, and a lot of guys will see us or hear us on YouTube and say, oh, we like your channel. But they don't actually know what our prime or main focus is, which is the digital magazine that comes out every single month. So we try and theme the magazine in a way that you can still get entertainment out of it even months in advance. So if you see an issue from June or July, you'll still get something out of it because our themes are more general than news sensitive. So I try to push that out a lot. This particular magazine, the last issue that we did was obviously the World Cup edition, and Dwayne Pretorius was on the front cover. So we gave some insight into what it's like to prepare for a World Cup. You gave an excellent interview as well in that particular magazine. You guys must go read that. There was an excellent article on what it takes to win a World Cup. So there's a lot of things that we do, but that's the main thing. And then we have a website as well, cricketfanaticsmag.com. If you want to find that, that's easy, of course, and you'll get a pop-up to the magazine. So you just have to put your email address in. Also, it's 100% free. Don't forget that. Every single issue to your email, 100% free. You know, that's my plug for the YouTube channel. So we have a website where we update you on regular news that happens in cricket. We're not a news company, so we're not necessarily going to give you breaking news stories all the time about what's happening all over the world. We're not a gossip channel either, so we're not going to talk about gossip that's happening. We mainly focus on South African news and South African things that are really massive breaking stories. Like, for example, if somebody dies tomorrow, we're going to do a story on it. If there's something that's happening from a Cricket South Africa board perspective or anything that's happening, which is basically every second of the day, then you're going to put it out there and let people know. And we do general match reports, but our match reports are more of player type of moments. We don't want to be like ESPN Click Info, Sport 24, all the other guys that give you a report from this is how many balls were bowled and this is how many wickets were taken, et cetera, et cetera. We try to highlight a particular performance or something that someone did really well in the game, and we try to bring that to the guys and also update them on generally what happened in the game. So our website is mainly for that, and features. We hop on that a lot. We try to tell stories that people haven't heard before. The untold stories of South African cricket is so important to us as a brand because we want to give people exposure that never normally get it. It's particularly women cricket, guys in semi-pro cricket, maybe club cricketers that you've never heard of before in South Africa. But as well as telling their stories in a unique way. It's not just a straight out quotes piece where you're just going to get, okay, he said, she said, whatever the case may be. It's going to be something that's going to move you. It's going to tell you something different about the person that you haven't heard of before. And then, of course, we've got opinion pieces, fan opinions. We've given you an opportunity as well. You've written a couple of columns on the site as well. And so many other guys as well have done so too. We had Faye Tunnicliffe, a South African women's cricketer. She gave some insight. We also ask any cricketers out there, any South African cricketers out there, if they want to write to us, they can have a free insight section on the website where they can promote all their channels, et cetera, and have their view seen by so many people. We have obviously social media, so Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And then we've got something that we try to do that's a little bit new, particularly in South Africa, and that is the YouTube channel. So we have daily shows where we update you on, it's a live daily show, so we update you on all the major talking points in South African cricket. And then we've have exclusive interviews. We've done so many. I'm not going to mention to all of them, but you can go have a look. There is a section in the playlist section to you to check everybody from AB to Lungi to, I don't know, to Graham Smith, whoever you want to, majority of the people that you can think of, except like one person which I really want to get on is someone like Hashim Amla. I've never interviewed him before, which is crazy. So it's really someone that I've been looking to interview for a very long time, and someone that I haven't got an opportunity to do so with. So I'm still waiting for that particular interview. And and then we have the podcast on a Sunday evening, which is the laid back show. That's the show at the night in the evening where we just sit back and we chat. I like my friends to maybe talk to us about what happened in their life. It's almost like you did with me at the beginning of this podcast. And just chat about things in general. And then we go into a main cricket topic and we like to interact with the live chat, etc. So the Sunday podcast is our main show every week at Sunday evenings at 8. So it will be obviously your time, 6 o'clock at the moment. So those are the things that I'm currently doing. So get in touch with us if you really want to do that and help us out. We need all the help we can get.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will just say this, listeners, having contributed and having known you, Khalid, for nearly 2 years now. My goodness, yeah. That's absolutely flown by. It was the first test, wasn't it? England versus South Africa, when all of our boys got ill. Absolutely hammered us as well, didn't you, in Centurion, in the Boxing Day test. And then we ended up winning the series 3-1, which was not a bad way to end my first stint on Cricket Fanatics magazine. But honestly, the content that is produced, the magazine, as Khalid, you rightfully said, you can find my piece with Tim Bresnan, the Warwickshire, Yorkshire, and former England all-rounder. Brilliant, brilliant insight from a World Cup winner. And of course, with the YouTube channel as well, every single day, pretty much, content goes on there for South African cricket fans. I can't recommend it enough. And of course, Khalid, I think that does bring us quite nicely with regards to today's main theme of the episode, which is the T20 World Cup. Yourself and everyone at Cricket Fanatics magazine has been covering the tournament brilliantly. We had the show the other night, didn't we, after England versus South Africa, which, to be honest, didn't exactly go our way. It went your boys' way, but it was a little bit too little too late, to be honest, for the Proteas, as we'll discuss in a few minutes. But just looking at the group tables from the 2021 T20 World Cup, we'll read those out first. So in Group 1, the group winners were England on 8 points with a healthy 2.464 net run rate. In second, Australia, also on 8 points with a 1.216 net run rate. Then in third was South Africa, Khalid, with a plus 0.739 net run rate, also on 8 points. In fourth was Sri Lanka on 4 points. In fifth, the defending champions, the West Indies, the men in maroon, on just 2 points. And in sixth were Bangladesh, who didn't win a single one of their games and finished in bottom place on 0 points. And then looking at Group 2, Pakistan, the only unbeaten team in the 2021 T20 World Cup so far. They had 10 points from their 5 games. In second were New Zealand on 8 points. In third were host India on 6 points. In fourth were Afghanistan on 4 points. In fifth were the mighty Namibia on 2 points. And in sixth and bottom place in Group 2 were Scotland with 0 points. So, Holly, just in terms of the tournament itself, before we look in depth into standout players from each of those two groups, what have you made of the tournament itself so far?
I think the one thing about this particular format and the way this T20 World Cup works, it really weeds out the lesser teams. I feel that the best teams go through. Unfortunately, the net run rate thing for me, it will be heartbreaking when you aren't, when it doesn't work in your favor. So for South Africa's case, we missed out on net run rate. I mean, you won 4 out of 5 games and yet you are still out of the tournament. And two teams above you, exactly the same thing, but that's just the net run rate is better. But for something like T20 cricket, I think it's okay because you want to promote an attacking brand of cricket. You want to promote an exciting brand of cricket when you are trying to put T20 to the world or trying to showcase T20 to the world. So I think so far it has been quite an interesting tournament and we've seen the best teams of this particular tournament go through. The only upset, or I would say the shock, was India. I think for everybody, and that's so obvious for me to say that. But putting India aside, I have to mention it, otherwise I'm going to look like I don't know anything about cricket. So then I'll bring out another one. I was very shocked by Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. I thought that these wickets would suit them the best. Okay, yes, they got hit by the injury of Shakib Al Hasan, who is their top wicket taker in the tournament as well. He did excellently in the beginning until he got injured. So I was a bit disappointed, particularly also because we have a lot of familiar faces in that dressing room from a South African point of view. And I really wanted to see someone like Ashwell get a win for a change. You know, like being in the batting coach at Bangladesh, you know, Otis Gibson with Russell Domingo as well. I really wanted to see them actually do well in this particular tournament. I didn't want them to end up above South Africa, of course, no, but I wanted them to at least do well, at least beat Australia. But other than that, that was a shock for me. You know, a lot of people might say, because when I looked at Herschel Gibbs, for example, I think on Twitter, and there were some other people that also spoke on Twitter, I think West Indies was also in the mix in a lot of their predictions. For me, when I looked at the West Indies and the way they played against South Africa, the way where South Africa was at that time, I really thought they were going to destroy us in that particular series. And I never told guys from, like, for example, other podcasts, etc. I didn't tell them that that's what I thought. But personally, inside, I was a little fearful of playing the world champions when we were trying to find our identity still. And funnily enough, we only realized now that our identity was that, you know, playing that conservative brand of cricket. They wanted to play, they're always talking about smart, aggressive, attacking cricket. And I never really saw that until England. To be honest, the way we approached the England match in this last game of the World Cup, that made me really feel proud. And that's why the headline of my review show was "I'm proud of the Proteas," because they really went out there and played with no fear. And we wanted that from them. If we saw them come out there a little bit tentative, like they were against Australia, they were like that. They lost a lot of wickets without playing an aggressive brand of cricket. And that was crazy for me. That hurts for me because I'm like, you're trying to prevent wickets from falling by playing this style, but then you still lose wickets and get bowled out for like 100. So like it's crazy like how that works for us from that point of view. But I think for you, if you had to pick, you would probably have said that South Africa surprised you in this particular tournament, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, they did. And in a positive manner as well, because I do have a tendency to support South Africa, not just in major tournaments, but other ones as well. In particular, when you look at county cricket, how many fantastic South African players have graced the county circuit over the years? I think for my county of Warwickshire, just to name a couple, in Sean Pollock and Dale Steyn, absolute legends of South African cricket, widely, widely regarded and revered here in the West Midlands as well. So I've always had that soft spot for the Proteas, and I genuinely thought heading into this year's competition, and Harlid, I've mentioned this so many times on your platform, Cricket Fanatics Magazine, the fact that I didn't think they played that brand of cricket, which was necessarily going to get them there in the top two, let alone the top three or top four. So for the Proteas to finish third and be so close, it's a common adage, but it was just a bridge too far, so close and yet so far in this year's particular tournament. But I think they can leave it with their heads held high. I'm going to be completely honest. And if we are going to look at the long term as well, they've got a foundation. They've got a core with the right additions into that South African team. They have got the weapons. They've got the resources available to do good in 2022. We don't know the groups yet, obviously. If they get in the group of death, who knows again? But I do feel as though the Proteas in particular should improve heading into next year's tournament, given the resources at their disposal. You mentioned Bangladesh. Bangladesh, for me, I'm going to be honest, probably more disappointed with them than India. Because when I saw them in 2019, and granted it's a 50-over format, but one of the real key things of their identity was being aggressive. It was coming out of the blocks really quickly, almost choking teams for any space whatsoever with the likes of Shakib, Mustafi Zorahman, Mashrafi Mortaza as well in that particular tournament. But in 2021, they lost to Scotland. And we'll talk about Scotland later because Scotland had a fantastic tournament. First time they ever reached the Super 12s in a T20 World Cup. But they lost that game pretty convincingly. And then as if that wasn't enough to go through that group stage, and granted it was the harder group, it was the harder group of the two. Group one was full of full members. It wasn't like group two, which had two associate teams, but the way in which they capitulated against England, against South Africa, against Australia as well. For me, I'm going to be honest, I was disappointed with the Tigers. I really was. And I'm not sure. See, this is the thing where I compare them with South Africa. I don't think they have the same foundation to achieve great things next year. Harley, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it was all too quick for everything that happened, you know, bringing people in to the setup, new people into the setup so soon to ahead of the World Cup. I mean, I've seen how Ashraf Prince is as a coach as well. I've seen how he works behind the scenes and how he can improve players from a batting perspective. But I think they needed more time with him, you know, because this was something that they needed to add over a while with him. Like, they need to listen to his philosophies. It's a completely different philosophy. It's also all foreign coaches. So for them, you know, it's all, so also, I don't know if the accents may be different for them, if they have to try to listen to them. I don't know how many times they speak to South Africans on a regular basis, but you know, it's all different guys, you know. And also Otis Gibson, you know, the type of bowlers that he likes, we know he loves those aggressive fast bowlers, you know. So I think it's going to take some time for them to actually work as a unit together. I hope they don't just decide, okay, you guys are out. Give them. I think they need some time with this coaching staff to really stamp their authority on this particular brand and their ideas and put it on that team. I mean, I don't think that we can use excuses anymore when you're looking at a team like Pakistan, for example, who don't really necessarily have a head coach or whatever, and they still are top of their log or top of their group. Yes, okay. We know that the conditions favor them because they've played there. They know the conditions very well from that perspective. Particularly their fast bowlers will know that. Vernie Philander doing excellently there, you know. That man has a lot of knowledge that I would love. I hope he can give that back to South African cricket, especially our young bowlers, just from the movement that he gets, because he could generate swing and movement and without a lot of pace towards the end of his career, which is a skill that a lot of people would love to have. So I think that's something that our youngsters really, really need. And to be able, and what he's done with that Pakistan bowling unit, he's taken them. Okay, they were really world class. Even when they came to South Africa, when I saw those guys bowl here, I was so taken aback. Shaheen Afridi, I met him, I spoke to him, I chatted to him. You know, he looks quite cocky on the field or confident on the field, but off the field, he was unbelievably humble. I was praising him, saying, "What?" I thought how amazing his performance was and stuff. He just said, "Shukran, shukran." That's all he said to me. Like, he just said, basically, "Thank you, thank you." And it was amazing to see a young player like that just be so humble, because you do get younger players that aren't. I've met a lot of younger players from other nations that aren't. You know, they back themselves fully. I'm not going to mention names, but when it comes to Pakistan, for example, I think for me, I always put them in the hat in tournaments, because they always suddenly perform. Like, I remember the Champions Trophy. They were like excellent. Nobody expected them to. They were always the dark horses. But I think it's coming to the point now where we have to stop calling them dark horses. They're doing it too often for us to be calling them dark horses still. I think we can start to call them tournament specialists that always get out into knockout phases, because they do it from time and time again with all the difficulties that they have to go through at home, mm-hmm. with all of those type of things that they have to face, for all of that and the money, because I mean, compare their nation compared to a nation like India has so much money in cricket, and they're still producing results and still producing amazing players. I mean, when we start picking the best players out of each group, and I don't want, I'll keep it for you to dictate that, but there's going to be a particular player from Pakistan that's one of my favorite players in the world at the moment that I'm going to pick, because I think he's been excellent in everything that they do.
Well, we'll hold our proverbial horses just for the time being, because that is Group 2. And I do want to talk at length about the likes of Pakistan, India, Scotland and Namibia in particular, and Afghanistan as well, who have plenty of county players who I will discuss in a little bit more depth as the podcast progresses. But just with regards to Group 1, we'll stay with Group 1 just for a few more minutes, because I want to know your standout player from Group 1. There are so many fantastic choices to choose from. You can choose a Proteus player if you like, Khalid. But if you had to choose just one standout player, it can be a batsman, bowler, all-rounder, whoever you like, who would you choose from Group 1 and why?
It's going to be, I think for me personally, I'll probably have to pick a South African player, and then that's just an extra, because we can't look past England. We really can't. I mean, dominant in basically every single game that they played. So I think someone like Butler was really outstanding throughout. Or not, I wouldn't say throughout, but he was outstanding, particularly that 100 that he scored. We can't look past that, something like that. He also scored a 50, of course, but ultimately, when I look at it, and I'm going to pick a guy that really stood out to me or surprised me in this tournament, I would have to say someone like Aidan Markram, from a South African point of view, was excellent. But I always believed that he would be able to do this. I've been a big fan of his for a very long time. But it's a player that surprised me, that's not even part of... He didn't end up being in one of the best teams in the tournament, and that's Asa Lanka. Oh, yeah. I really was impressed by the way he performed. I think he's been excellent in the entire tournament. And your guy, of course, that you've always been speaking about, Asa Lanka. So when you look at it from that point of view, I mean, you can't really go wrong there, because Asa Lanka, top wicket taker in the tournament. Number one ranked bowler. He overtook Shamsi in this particular tournament, even though Shamsi was excellent in this tournament. For him to be able to overtake him in this, with Shamsi being in form, is excellent from his point of view. And surprisingly, Zampa, because I've never actually rated Zampa to the degree that a lot of people do, actually. I've always thought that you can get at him. Like, I've always thought that, like, if you can hit him away to the boundary and put some pressure on him, I feel he'll crack. But a lot of luck's on his side as well. But you have to give him credit, because he does it over and over again, no matter what the format is. So, but for me, I would have to say Aidan Markram and Asa Lanka really stand out, other than obviously Joss Butler with that century.
Fair enough, Khalid. Fair enough. Now, I'll start off with my honourable mentions. And I have to mention Winindu Hasaranga. I have to. As you said, he's my boy. I've been mentioning him for absolutely ages. 16 wickets in the tournament. 16 wickets with a 5.20 economy rate. I want to see this guy in county cricket.
Including a hat-trick.
Exactly, including a hat-trick. as if he hadn't done enough in this year's tournament. Winindu Hasaranga da Silva has got to get a county contract. I want to see this guy, whether it's in the Championship, the Royal London One Day Cup, the T20 Blast, I want to see him. We've seen the likes of Adam Zampa. Zampa played for Essex a couple of years back. We've seen Tabrez Shamsi for Northamptonshire. We've seen Aidan Markram, funnily enough, for Hampshire as well. So the fact is, we've mentioned quite a few county guys here, but Winindu Hasaranga hasn't played in the circuit. So I'm definitely part of the Winindu Hasaranga da Silva fan club. I want to see him in county cricket. I don't care who it's for, but fingers crossed we will see that dream realised in 2022. But this is the County Cricket Podcast, Khalid, and I do have to have a little bit of English bias when I talk about this guy, and that is, of course, Joss Butler. And if not for anything else, the guy scored 240 runs. I think he's averaging something like 120 as well in this year's tournament, which is staggering, with a 155.84 strike rate as well, which is staggering. It's absolutely staggering on these slower surfaces such as Sharjah. But if not for those stats, that 100 against Sri Lanka, 101 out, his first ever in the format, to basically salvage England's entire campaign, you could argue, because we ended up losing to South Africa in the final game. If England would have lost that, we could have been out of the tournament. We were in so many issues there. We were in dire straits, him and Owen Morgan. Morgan as well, who was completely disregarded. People were saying he's out of form, he's finished, he should retire after this World Cup. He finished on 40. He produced a really, really good knock. But Joss Butler, the way in which he just exploded as that innings began to progress, outstanding. And I tell you what, if he can replicate even a smidge of that in Wednesday's semi-final against New Zealand, like he did in 2016, I'll tell you what, we could go through. We could go through to the T20 World Cup final. But I'm going to hold my horses. I'm not going to jump the gun just yet. But fingers crossed, Joss can perform well in Abu Dhabi against New Zealand on Wednesday. But Holly, that's pretty much it, to be honest, in terms of our discussion for Group 1 for the time being. Mm-hmm. We'll come back in terms of, you know, maybe a surprise package from Group 1 later. But let's move on to Group 2. And we alluded to them beforehand, and that is, of course, Pakistan. Now, Pakistan have had all sorts of changes. You mentioned the head coach situation. They didn't have a CEO beforehand as well, with Wasim Khan resigning. He's now been replaced by Ramiz Raja. You had two tours cancelled, with New Zealand and England pulling out of their respective tours to the country as well. Pakistan before this World Cup were written off by a lot of people, but this is a team which has got so much experience there. The PSL has been held here for years. Remember, Pakistan was basically exiled from international cricket for a decade as well. So they played the majority of their matches in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and a few in Sharjah as well. The way in which this team has come into this tournament, and in particular that first game, a statement victory, 10 wickets, Babar Azam and Mohammad Rizwan absolutely destroyed India, who for me, I said they were my favourites. I thought India were going to go on and win this tournament. They'd had the England series, they'd played the IPL beforehand on these wickets. Maybe you could argue it's a little bit of fatigue, a little bit of burnout as well, but they had all of the makings of an excellent team heading into this year's World Cup, and it just hasn't materialised. Pakistan, on the other hand, have come into this year's World Cup, played on the front foot, and they're playing at their absolute best. And when they play at their best, they are one of the best teams to watch in the world. They're incredibly entertaining. They're an enthralling side. And in particular, their seam attack with the likes of Shaheen Shah Afridi, who'll be playing for Middlesex next season in county cricket, Harris Ralph, Hassan Ali, to name but a few. How impressed have you been with the men in green in this year's tournament so far?
The way they played against us leading into this tournament, I really could see it. Because it wasn't just like, oh, South Africa's playing poorly, or it's the manner in which they approached every single game. They were like, they're going to come here. They're not going to take it easy. They're going to try and destroy us. And Babar Azam is just excellent. And that's the player that I was talking about. He's the standout player for me by far. I mean, because most consistent four half centuries in the tournament. So, like, I mean, that's what, how consistent can you be? So, I mean, he's been excellent. I don't know what more to say about him, because he's the backbone of that entire team. He leads from the front. He's aggressive. He's humble. He's everything that you want in a captain. He's everything that you want in a cricketer. He's just showing the world what he's doing. And you know what I want to bring up, and this is something that maybe is a little bit of a debate between the two of us, we could have a little bit of a debate, because we both enjoy now and again, okay, not maybe you more than me, but the IPL. I know that you're such a big fan of the IPL, and you know my friend, my co-host on the Daily Show, Aditya, massive fan of the IPL as well, understandably. And I've constantly had this conversation, and I think Pakistan proved me right, because none of them play in the IPL. And when I'm looking at it and the way they played against India, Pakistan is actually showing the world how T20 cricket can be played. And for them to be the only unbeaten team so far in this tournament, it just shows the IPL might be a little bit exaggerated of how good that tournament is. I feel like I don't think that you can compare, even though they have international players, I don't think you can compare international cricket to the IPL. I think it's chalk and cheese. For me personally, international cricket, the pressure that's on you is a whole different type of pressure. It's a pressure that you won't feel. For an overseas player to go to the IPL and play, they get a big paycheck. They're under pressure, yes, if they maybe miss out of this position in the team. But they're still going to go out there, have fun, there's no pressure from back home. I mean, for South Africans, I know for a fact, because the pressure back home is ridiculous. They're not getting that pressure in the IPL. The IPL is like, oh, people are like, oh, okay, cool, you did well in the IPL, yeah. But if you play badly for your country, I'm telling you, you're going to hear about it on Twitter, on social media. You'll still hear it on MySpace, and it doesn't even exist anymore. So from that perspective, I don't think you can compare international cricket to the IPL. And for me, personally, it's proving it, because remember that a lot of the bowlers that you face, India, actually, in the IPL, you face a lot of the Indian bowlers that are not necessarily internationals. So you're not actually playing against the best bowlers in the world. Whereas if you're playing another opposition, you're playing against the four best from that country or the five best from that country. And with the nations that are in this World Cup, you're playing most majority of the bowlers that you're facing are some of the best in the world. So I feel that the constant pressure, for example, you have Mitchell Stark, Josh Hazlewood, and Pat Cummins, Zampa, all in one team bowling at you. That's crazy. Now, compared to the IPL, you might have one or two bowlers that, you know, I can go after him. It's the same like in any domestic tournament, I feel. You'll have, in domestic tournaments and those things, you always have a bowler that is excellent, and there's one that you can have a go at, two, maybe extra ones that you can have a go at. Even so, look at South Africa's bowling attack. I mean, you've got Andrik Nokia coming down, you've got Kagiso Rabada, then you have Tabay Shamsi, then you have Keshav Maharaj, then you have Dwayne Pretorius coming at you. And Lungi Ngidi, who plays for Chennai Super Kings, if he's playing, then that means you've got three fast bowlers that are in some of the best teams in the IPL bowling at you and coming at you. That you won't necessarily get in the IPL, I feel. So international cricket's a whole different ball game for me, I feel. And Pakistan's proving that for me personally. But there may be people will argue with me and say, no, but you see, they've been playing Pakistan Super League in the, you know, in that area for so many years, blah, blah, blah.
Well, let's unpack that, because this is a topic of debate, and it's also something which I think is very relevant to Indian cricket in general. I'm going to be completely honest, and for those who know a little bit of context around the BCCI, the Board of Control for Cricket in India, the governing board of cricket in the country, there is this law, and I absolutely hate it. I've hated it for years. This is the one thing that I don't like about the IPL, and it's the player exclusivity law, because that applies to every single Indian player. For those who don't know this, we used to see in county cricket, for example, Virender Sehwag, I think in 2004, 2005 this was, played for Leicestershire. Murali Kartik played for Middlesex. Sachin Tendulkar famously played for Yorkshire. Rahul Dravid in 2003 played for Scotland in our 40-over competition. We used to have so many fantastic Indian players in county cricket, and we still do in the Red Bull format. We've had Ashwin, for example. He's played for Surrey this season. Hanuma Vihari played for my county of Warwickshire in the 2021 Championship, but they're not allowed to play in the T20 Blast. And that is something which I am vehemently against. I cannot stand it. I think it's a really, really bad law. I understand it for the likes of a Virat Kohli, a Rohit Sharma, a Jasprit Bumrah, an MS Dhoni, the real icons of Indian cricket who are good enough. They don't need that experience of traveling all over the world playing different domestic tournaments, because they've been there and done it for India. They don't need that same thing. And if you as a country want to have the IPL and say this is the only T20 league where you can see Virat Kohli, I've got no problem with that. The problem that I have with those laws, however, is for the fringe players, the Sanju Samsons of the world, the Ravi Bishnois, for example, the guys who are coming up, the Devdutt Padikkals, the Harshal Patels, the Rutaraj Gaikwads of the world, just to name but a few. There's so many fantastic players in India who would walk into teams around the domestic circuits all around the world, in the CPL, here in the T20 Blast in South Africa, with the MSL as well, the Mzansi Super League, the Big Bash, the Super Smash in New Zealand. And they don't have that chance. If you look at the top four teams right now, the four semi-finalists, who are they? England, Australia, Pakistan, and New Zealand. Look at the defending champions as well, the West Indies. What do these teams all have in common? Every single one of those teams is packed full of domestic powerhouses. Guys who go all around the world traveling to England to play T20 Blast, playing in the Caribbean Premier League, in the CPL, in the West Indies. They play the IPL, they'll play the PSL, they'll play in the Big Bash. They play all around the world. And not only do you get this experience and better knowledge of playing conditions, but you're also rubbing shoulders with experienced players. You're constantly learning. You're learning new things. You're learning things which you wouldn't learn in your own country. And that is what has made these teams like Pakistan. Look at Babar Azam, for example. He plays in the PSL. He captains the Karachi Kings, but he also came and played for Somerset. He also plays all around the world for Pakistan as their captain. He used to play for the Guyana Amazon Warriors in the CPL. He's been there and done it across most franchise leagues. And he's brilliant.
I hope they sign him in the Mzansi. I really hope they sign him in the Mzansi.
And to be honest, I hope he gets another county contract as well. I'd love to see him live. Bab Razam, fantastic. Same with Mohamed Rizwan. I'd love to see him get a county contract. I think he'd be a good fit at Hampshire, to be honest, but we'll have to wait and see. Maybe Warwickshire, who knows? I'd love to see him at Edgbaston, but I'll travel the lengths of the country to watch Mohamed Rizwan in action. But see, my point is that these laws, I think, are holding Indian cricket back. Because you look at this year's tournament, I'm going to be honest, selection as well. I still think that guys like Yuzvendra Chahal, he should have been there as well. Harshal Patel took 32 wickets, the most ever in IPL history, and wasn't selected on the eve of a major tournament. For me, I think it's selection. I also hate these exclusivity laws. I've said it across multiple platforms. I don't mind saying it on my own, because it really does limit and regress Indian cricket. And it also takes away opportunities for us as fans. As I said, I love it when the Indian players come and play for counties. I love it. I loved it this season. I know it didn't quite work out for Hanuma Vihari, but when he scored that 50-odd against Essex, brilliant. I absolutely loved it. I'd love a guy like Jadeja to come and play in the T20 Blast. I'd love to see a guy like Devdutt Padikkal or Harshal Patel or Rituraj Gaikwad or even someone like a Hardik Pandya, if they were to be that lenient. They would walk into all of these domestic tournaments, and I just feel as though this law has really, really set back Indian cricket. And there's so much more I could go into, Harley. There really is. This is a podcast episode in itself, because I've spent hours and hours and hours talking about my dislike for this and the opportunities that it limits for Indian players. But yeah, for me personally, I think that this tournament should be a wake-up call. I really do think so. When you look back as well, India have not won a major trophy since, 2013, when they won the Champions Trophy. That was the last time that India won an ICC tournament. New Zealand, England, Pakistan, West Indies, all of these teams are now moving on in international cricket and they're winning trophies. Yeah. India aren't. India have won the T20 World Cup in 2007. England have won it more recently in 2010. The West Indies have won it twice. And yet India has, in my opinion at least, the best domestic tournament in the world. There's something else holding back this team. And in my personal opinion, and again, Harley, you may disagree, the listeners may disagree, and that's absolutely fine, because it's discourse, it's debate, it's conversation about the game that we all love. But for me personally, I would like to see those laws changed, altered. If you want to keep Kohli, Sharma, Bumrah, Dhoni, the real A-plus tier players in the IPL, and make it exclusive for them, so be it. But for the fringe players, I guarantee if those laws were changed and altered slightly, they'd be snapped up in an instant.
It could be their gift to the world, you know? Their gift to the world of cricket. I really thought that things were going to change with the global T20 league initially in South Africa, because a lot of India owners came in, were involved. For example, Shah Rukh Khan from the Knight Riders, he bought a team
in Cape Town, wasn't it?
Yeah, in Cape Town. And Pretty Zinta bought the Stellenbosch one in, also in basically Cape Town, but it's a little bit further. She bought the Stellenbosch Kings. Well, it was funny, it was called the Stellenbosch Monarchs, and then I went to the launch, and she changed the name at the launch and to the Stellenbosch Kings. So it was a massive reveal. I mean, I think Lazard Williams was going to play for them, actually, to be honest with you. He was signed up by them. I remember interviewing that day. But I thought that, and there was also a owner, I can't remember who it was exactly, but there was another India owner of a businessman that bought another team. I can't remember which one. So I really thought that might have been the time for things to change, because if South Africa had a successful first tournament, I'm sure that those owners would have tried, you know, to try and get that ban changed or that law changed so that more India guys can come play. I mean, I would like to see Shaw, you know, guys like that, the younger up and coming talents, playing in this particular tournament. I mean, there's so many that don't get exposure. Why not? You guys have so many cricketers out there. There's so many cricketers that India produce over and over again that don't get to play international cricket. I don't see why not, you know.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It disappoints me. It really does, because I look at young English talent right now. And to be honest, I think the T20 Blast is massively underrated on a global scale, because look at the players it's producing. Every single one of these players in that current England team has been produced by county cricket. And I feel as though the T20 Blast doesn't always get the plaudits that it deserves, but it is a very, very useful competition for developing talent. And you look at the next wave generation, whatever you want to call them, of English players, the Tom Bantons, the Phil Salts, just to name a couple, the Will Jacks. Will Jacks went and played for the Hobart Hurricanes in last year's Big Bash. There's so many fantastic players in England who have those opportunities. You've got Dan Mousley, for example, a former guest here. I really like him. He's one of my favourite upcoming Warwickshire players as well. He, right now, as we speak, is in Sri Lanka, playing for Burger Recreation Club in their 50-over tournament. He's getting opportunities to learn across the globe. I just feel as though Indian players, Prithvi Shaw's a great shout as well. I feel as though he'd be a great player if he could play in England, the West Indies, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa as well, because he's got great potential. He's been brilliant for Mumbai for a number of years and Delhi in the IPL, but he won't have those opportunities with these current laws in place. So we'll have to wait and see whether or not this will be the catalyst which sparks a change with the BCCI and the way in which they look at those laws. We'll have to wait and see. Only time will tell. But I think it's safe to say that India, at least, I think have had a pretty underwhelming tournament. But Khalid, we have spoken there about India and Pakistan, the two big powerhouses. New Zealand as well. We'll talk about them when we get onto our predictions. And Afghanistan as well, who, to be honest, at times did well. I feel as though the batting did kind of let them down at times. That was my one kind of perceived vulnerability. Unfortunately, it came true in this year's tournament. But I think Afghanistan as well definitely gave themselves a decent showing at times in this World Cup. But before we get onto those teams and our standout player from Group 2, we have to talk about the associate teams which made it through, don't we? And in particular, my boys, as we call them, the mighty, mighty Namibia. A team which, for those who know me outside of the podcasting world, outside of the county world as well, they are one of my favourite associate teams. They really are. David Visa, what an addition he's been. Used to play for the Proteas, has been a veteran, has been outstanding as well in T20 tournaments this season and this year. I'm talking about for Sussex in the T20 Blast, the Lahore Calendars in the PSL, the St. Lucia Kings in the CPL, and the way in which he's just fitted into this Namibian outfit, provided so much experience, so much assurance, and just carried that middle order has been fantastic to see. It really has. And another great thing about this tournament so far, I must admit I've enjoyed it, as you may be able to tell by the tone of my voice, but with Namibia, seeing their young talent coming through, and Harlan, I'd love to know your thoughts on these three guys in particular, because I saw them in the warm-up matches against the Knights and the Titans, two South African domestic teams. So the three names that I have, okay, are Michael van Lingen, Jan Nicol Ofde-Eaton, and I suppose the man of the moment, Ruben Trumpelman, who obviously, you know, took those early wickets against Scotland, allowed the mighty Eagles to secure their first ever Super 12s victory. How impressed have you been with Namibia? And I'll also throw Scotland in there as well. Scotland have plenty of former county players, Mark Watt, Safian Sharif, George Munsey, Callum McLeod, Carl Kurtzer, to name but a few. But how impressed have you been with Namibia and also Scotland?
I think what I like about them the most is the no fear that they showed. They didn't show that they were scared of taking on any of the big teams once they got through. I just think that they came through the stages with this confidence brewing within them, and it just showed in the chat. They all were excellent. And for Namibia particularly, I think you could see what they left the impression that they left, you know, on everybody as you put up the flag. So they left an impression even on Pakistan. You saw the footage of Pakistan going to the dressing room afterwards. And it's interesting because, I mean, David Visa is excellent guy as well. I think I've spoken to him once before. I think it was when in the Nzansi Super League, I had a chat with him. His knowledge on the game, first and foremost, is amazing. The way he speaks about the game, and you can hear the passion in his voice. You can hear the passion in the way he thinks about the game. And also he never shies away from trying to help youngsters as much as he can. You know, he's quite humble as well. He doesn't rate himself necessarily as this global superstar, but in fact, he actually is. You know, he is well known around the world. Wherever you speak about him, they will know his name and they do ask him. A lot of the Indian players will talk about him on social media and they'll talk to us in the live chats about it. And so I have been very impressed with him. You know, a lot of people with Trumpelman, they don't really know much about him. For me personally, I remember him in like with coming through the system and Nissan and 90 and Kaya Majorowicz, etc. But he was almost, for me personally, always in the shadow of other all-rounders that were coming through the system in South Africa. I mean, Vian Mulder, for one. Vian Mulder is one of the most talented all-rounders that we have seen. I mean, at the Kaya Majorowicz, he was, if you look at him, for example, compared to all that, there was an Isanda 19s when they played this triangular, I think it was, against Zimbabwe, and I can't remember who the other team was. I think it was Zimbabwe, and I can't remember who the other team was. But the way he looked compared to his peers, he's much bigger than a lot of his peers. So it just looked unfair that he's playing over there at the under 19 in Kaya Majorowicz, smacking him around the park. He still battered up the water. So there was a lot of all-rounders coming to the system in Kaya Majorowicz that kind of Trippelman was in the shadows a little bit of them. So he is a very talented player, and I've been very impressed by the way he has showcased his talent in this particular tournament, playing with the big boys, not with no fear. That's the main thing. I like to see that from the smaller teams. And this is the reason why I personally would prefer to have quarterfinals, etc., in a tournament like this, because I would like to see smaller teams. I want that dream, you know. You want that cricket dream of like one of the unknown teams to go through to the final and maybe cause an upset, which I feel this format doesn't necessarily open that up too much. You get destroyed by the bigger teams. The bigger teams play the bigger teams, and that's how it ends up. Whereas if we had a quarterfinal, maybe we would have seen, you know, the likes of a Namibia maybe play a Bangladesh and maybe beat Bangladesh and maybe go through to like a semi, and it would have been excellent to maybe be able to see something like that, I feel. But unfortunately, it's not like that. But I've been impressed by the attitude, first and foremost, that they never backed down until the end. Even though they were maybe being destroyed or they skittled, they came out with the same mentality and attitude. And I mean, someone that I would consider him someone that I'm very close to in that Namibian setup is someone like Richard Das Neves, one of the coaches. Like, we have to have another conversation. Also, fellow Manchester United fan, we're gonna have a few tears while we're speaking, but. I want to hear from him actually before I actually give my opinion on them exactly and what I've seen, because I didn't watch a lot of their games. I only watched one or two, unfortunately.
I watched all of them.
I know you would have.
Religiously.
So I was so busy with South African cricket content. It was ridiculous. And with domestic cricket happening the same time as the tournament, it's been quite hectic for me. So I'm going to actually have a conversation with Richard and check up with him, and what they've actually learned would be interesting. We're going to do an article on with him in this. We're going to try to do an article with him for the next issue of the magazine. We're going to contact him and ask him, and then we can get some learnings from him. So don't forget to subscribe, guys, and download that so you can get that information. Oh, what are you going to actually do for the magazine is the question. I'll ask you that off air.
Yeah, we'll have a discussion about the article later, to be honest, Harley. But getting back on track there with regards to Namibia, another South African in their setup is Albie Morkel. I mean, what a fantastic guy to learn off of for Ruben Trumpelman, yeah. Ben Chikongo as well. And just looking at Ruben Trumpelman in particular, 6 wickets with a 7.67 economy rate, facing the likes of Pakistan, the likes of Afghanistan, New Zealand and India. Outstanding. And I will just say this because it is the Counter Cricket Podcast. With the Royal London One Day Cup next year running alongside the 100, teams might be looking for some cost-effective overseas options. I mentioned Curtis Kampfer as one of these as well. Mark Watts, another one, the Scottish left-arm off-spinner. But I think Trumpelman could be quite a nice option. Offers you that different angle. He's tall. He generates extra zip, extra bounce. And if he's consistent, he's a very, very handy option to have in any 11. So Ruben Trumpelman, watch out for him. Definitely a name for the future, as is Michael van Lingen, as is Ben Chikongo, as is Jan Nicol Lofty-Eaton. Lots to be optimistic for the Mighty Eagles. And again, I'll go into a lot more detail about those on another podcast. Who knows? We might get one of their players or one of the coaches on board at some point. But yeah, wishing the Eagles nothing but the best of luck. Also, Scotland as well. Fantastic, reaching the Super 12s for the first time in their history. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And Mark Watt, what a fantastic tournament he has had. I'm annoyed that the 1-for-23 streak came to an end, unfortunately, but he was absolutely brilliant. A former counter cricketer as well, played for Derbyshire, played for Lancashire as well in past seasons. So it's been brilliant to watch the Scottish boys, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we can see a little bit of a resurgence in Scottish cricket, because tell you what, there's some lovely grounds there. The Grange in Edinburgh, Manor Field up in Aberdeen as well. It's a nice place to go and watch cricket, Scotland. So fingers crossed the men in purple, as they now are, can build on this and hopefully put together a good campaign in 2022. So Harley, before we get on to our predictions then, we do, of course, have to look at our group two standout players. And again, there's a lot to choose from. I think we know who yours is. Is it Babar Azam?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Fair enough. To be honest.
Pick another.
I've actually gone for him as well. I've gone for Babar Azam. 264 runs in five games, a 128.15 strike rate, 23 boundaries as well. He's been absolutely unstoppable. Yeah. And as if that wasn't enough, you alluded to it beforehand, 450 plus scores. It's ridiculous.
Unbelievable. I think it's excellent. There's nothing more I can really say about Babar. I mean, I've been impressed by him. He's one of my favorite players in the world. So I've been very impressed by his approach and showing that you can completely dominate a team up front, what it does to you, to your confidence as a team. If you have an opener of that caliber that can do that to you within the power play and just destroy you, it's very difficult to come back from that. But I have to mention someone else, and that's who I've been very impressed with, and that's Trent Boult.
Oh, yeah.
And he, for me, that guy, England, I think England must beware of a guy like Trent Boult, because, and Saudi as well, because they've got this knack to come alive in pressure situations. The New Zealanders, generally speaking, I mean, Kane Williamson, one of the nicest human beings on the planet. Like, literally, I heard a story. One of my friends told me a story of when he went to the World Cup. And it was after you guys won the World Cup, and there was a press conference, and Kane Williamson went out first. And after the press conference was done, according to my friend who was in the press conference, he said that the entire press room stood up and gave him a standing ovation after his talk, which is unheard of. You know, you don't really get that type of behavior within that. So it just shows. And he probably didn't even know what he said to make him do that. His humbleness is excellent. He's just an unbelievably humble guy. And you know what makes him the most humble is the fact that it comes naturally to him. It's not like that. I think that's how he just naturally is. And the fact that we can have someone like that in cricket is excellent. And I don't think there's a lot of people that can say a bad thing about him and it's the spirit in which he plays the game. You know, but yeah, I needed to mention Trent Boult, because I think Trent Boult has been amazing.
He has indeed. And again, I put this on our Twitter account, funnily enough. He has not played county cricket. I find that absolutely staggering. Tim Southey has.
Recruit everybody.
I am, Harley, because I want to see these guys in real life. I want to see Hasaranga. I want to see Mohammed Rizwan. I want to see Anrik Nolkia. I also put this up on Twitter the other day. I know I've said in the past Ollie Stone is better than Anrik Nolkia. I still stand by that. Okay. When Ollie Stone is fully fit, and we're not going to get into that debate, okay, on tonight's podcast. But I'm just saying, Warwickshire need an out and out express bowler next season in the T20 Blast in particular. Could we see Anrik Nolkia and Ollie Stone together make it happen, Warwickshire? That's all I'm going to say. But
well, that would be excellent.
It would. It'd be terrifying. Yeah. Teams would just forfeit on their way to allowing Warwickshire to reach the finals day for the first time in, five seasons now? We last reached it in 2017. So
but you do know Nokia will be the one that takes all the big wickets, because he has a knack for taking the big wickets. You know, the Virat Kohlis of the world, etc. So, I mean,
Ollie Stone also takes some big wickets as well.
He's the one that took Josh Butler's wicket, just saying. You know, so I'm just saying, a couple of times. At IPL as well as in the World Cup. So I think Nokia has a knack for taking the big guys. So I'm sorry, but I think Stone will have to take, you know, the bowlers out, you know. I think.
We're going to get into this debate, aren't we?
No, let's not.
No, obviously, both absolutely fantastic players. Really are both brilliant bowlers. I mean, Ollie averages less than 20 in Test cricket. Outstanding cricketer. And Anrik Nolkia has been a revelation. He really has. And it's good to see as well, because I remember watching him for the Warriors. And to be fair, he's always showed this bit of promise, hasn't he? He's always been an electrifying seam option. But it's just consistency. His radar used to go a little bit awry. from time to time. He's now found that consistency, such a reliable option. We could have mentioned him, to be honest, in the Group 1 standout player as well. I think he's been excellent, as was Dwayne Pretorius. But yeah, I must admit, there's quite a few players I want to see in county cricket. And yes, it is fanciful thinking, but hey, I'm just saying there's some overseas options available. There are some empty overseas slots. Any counties out there, if you're going to listen, Leicester should listen to my advice with Ramanullah Gurbaz, and he has now signed for the Running Foxes. So just saying, any of the counties out there listening, just heed my advice. That's all I'll say. But in terms of standout Group 2 player, then, we're going to both be in agreement. That doesn't happen often, to be honest, on any of our platforms. But Babar Azam?
Yeah, 100%. That's the week.
Fantastic. Yeah, so Babar Azam and Joss Butler, I think, will go as our standout ones. Trent Bolt being an honourable mention, as is Winindu Hasaranga. So, Harley, before we wrap up today's episode, I do just have two more questions, one of them being the predictions. That's what we'll end on. But in terms of a surprise package, from both a team and a player perspective, who has really surprised you, maybe positively as well, in this year's tournament from each of those views?
I think Dwayne Pretorius, I wouldn't say surprised me. What I was impressed about when it comes to Dwayne is I interviewed Dwayne for the feature of our World Cup edition. He was the front cover actually of the World Cup edition. And there were certain things that he said in there that really made me step back and say, really? And then I was like, but yeah, I can see it. For example, he spoke to me about, okay, we didn't really see the batting side of it come to fruition, but he spoke about Dwayne Bravo, particularly someone that he would like to model his game on with the ball. And I would have never predicted that Dwayne Pretorius would take the death overs for South Africa. That was a major shock for me as a South African cricket fan, because I thought that Andik Nokia, Kagiso Rabada, they've been doing it in the IPL. They are death bowlers. It has to be them in the T20 format. But Bavuma actually trusted Dwayne with the death overs in quite a few matches, and he did excellently doing it. I mean, 9 wickets in the tournament as well. He's bowled excellently in this tournament, and I was very, very surprised by that, you know, because for me personally, always, I've always seen Dwayne actually, and I don't know if he knows this, but I've always seen him as a batting all-rounder. I've never actually seen him as a bowling all-rounder. I mean, economy rate of 6.88, it's not as good as the guys above him, of course, but you're talking about spinners, but I think that he's been excellent throughout the tournament, and I really enjoyed watching him bowl at the death, for example. And I've always seen him as a batting all-rounder for the Lions and stuff, and for the Paul Rocks. He actually saved the team, the Paul Rocks, with the bat, not with the ball. So I like the way he's added to variations to his and consistency. That wider deliveries that he was bowling consistently, I was very impressed by that. And I'm obviously going to talk about the South African point of view because, you know, I watched all of their games, of course, and I was covering it. So I was ready. My mind was really fixed on them, or my concentration was really fixed on them. But I did mention someone that stood out, like, for example, someone that to look out for the future is definitely Asalanka, like I said. Mm-hmm. I think for Sri Lanka have a very young team, and we mustn't sleep on them for the next World Cup, I think. I think if they can just get everything in order, I don't think they should let go of Mickey Arthur either. I think he's instilled something in them. Their fielding has been incredible, actually, leading compared to other times, I feel, before. Like, I think they're a lot braver now in the approach with a lot of things. So, particularly, he stood out to me, I would say. In Group 2, standout performers for me, I think everybody performed it like they were supposed to in this particular group. So there wasn't really necessarily anybody that I would say, like, really, oh my God, like, it surprised me, really. The guys that were supposed to perform performed ultimately for me. So, I mean, Moharram Rizwan, we know what he can do. The same buddy that I spoke about earlier on, he told me as well, before South Africa series, before anything, he's like, just watch this guy. I'm telling you, this guy is going to be a superstar. And he's proving it. So I think on the other end, everybody that was supposed to perform kind of performed in the top teams. Whereas in Group 1, there were more surprise performances, I feel.
Fair enough, Arlid. I'm going to be honest. In terms of my surprise packages, Dwayne Pretorius was one of those. And it's funny that you mentioned the role between him and Themba Bavuma, because for the South African listeners and yourself, you'll say that was made at the Lions. I would say that was made in Northamptonshire as the host of the County Cricket podcast. But no, all jokes aside, absolutely.
He spoke about that, actually. He did speak about Northamptonshire. He spoke about you guys, or not you guys, but he spoke about that. I asked him about it and he did mention it in the interview as well.
Well, that is wonderful to hear. It really is, because he did have a decent stint, as did Themba, as did Jason Holder as well in 2019. Northampton had some excellent overseas players, to be honest, recently. But getting back onto topic, Dwayne Pretorius for me, absolutely, has to be up there. As does Charith Asselanka, 24 years of age. He's got years ahead of him, as has Patum Nisanka, yeah. Another one who has so much promise. Mahesh Tikshana as well. This Sri Lanka side has got lots of potential. And I'm not going to go into it on this podcast. We don't have enough time, but they do have some domestic circuit shortcomings, which I think could potentially hinder Sri Lanka in the future. But the key thing for me, I think, is the retention of Mickey Arthur. Now, Khalid, I'm not sure if you've heard this or the listeners out there either, but Derbyshire County Cricket Club have been in contact with Mickey Arthur to take up their role as director of cricket, because Dave Horton's now moved on. He's now back in Zimbabwe cricket. So we'll have to wait and see how that develops, if there are any developments. I'm going to be honest, this is Mickey Arthur's team. I think for the good of Sri Lankan cricket, I think he might stay. I think he'll stay. Again, nothing's been confirmed, and he should stay. I would agree with that, to be honest.
I like what he's done with him.
Exactly. I like the new identity of this Sri Lanka team, and they've got loads of promise. And even in Red Bull cricket, with the likes of Lasith and Bordenaya, you've got Praveen Jayawardenewala as well. There's so many fantastic Sri Lankans. There really are. So hopefully they can improve heading into next year's tournaments. And in terms of surprise package in Group 2, I've got to say Najibullah Zadran. I thought he was fantastic. Oh. I really did. I'm going to be honest. I did not expect him, having watched him in the CPL, having watched him in Afghanistan in the Shpageeza Premier League as well, and various competitions for Afghanistan, various bilateral series as well. I never expected him to be the anchor, almost the foundation of the Afghan batting lineup, which is a lineup consisting of the likes of Hazratullah Zazai, Mohammad Shahzad, Ramanullah Gurbaz, Gulbuddin Naeem, the president, another Northampton and former Leicestershire player, Mohammad Nabi. And yet Najibullah Zadran shouldered the responsibility on numerous occasions. So I would choose him as my surprise package, but again, in a very, very good way. And then in terms of surprise team, it can only be one, but it's a really, really pleasant surprise, and that is, of course, Namibia. Winning that game against Scotland was outstanding. I'm going to be honest, I celebrated that as much as an England victory. I really did. I love the journey that these guys have been on. And for those who don't understand the wider context of Namibia's cricketing environment, really, this is a country of 2.5 million people. To put that into context, it's a quarter of the population of London. Okay, they have 5 cricket grounds in the entire country, 5 functional grounds that you can play multi-day cricket at. 5.
Half the population of Cape Town.
There's another stat for the South African listeners out there to put it into context. But again, 5 cricket grounds. We think here in England and Wales, even in South Africa, you've got loads of professional grounds. You've got absolutely loads. We have here in the Midlands alone, we have 6. We have more than the entirety of Namibia. This is a team which struggled in the African regional qualifiers, almost lost out to the likes of Uganda. And yet they made it through those. They made it through the main qualifier in 2019. Then COVID strikes. They lose a couple of players, Zhivago Groeneveld and JP Kurtzer. And they're left out basically to sea. They don't know what they're going to do. They can't train. They can't practice. They don't have the same facilities as an England, an India, a Pakistan, an Australia, South Africa, to name but a few. They come into the UAE in 2021, having not played loads of cricket in these conditions, and they are outstanding. They were absolutely outstanding to beat Ireland, the Netherlands, and Scotland. The mighty Eagles take a bow. You've done us proud and cannot wait to see them in the 2022 edition in Australia next year. But Khalid, before we end today's episode and we say our goodbyes for what has been a thoroughly engrossing episode of the County Cricket Podcast, we do, of course, have our our money segment, I suppose, and that is, of course, the predictions. A segment which I never seem to do well in particular when you think that I predicted a final between India and the West Indies. We'll have to wait and see how these predictions go. But
did you really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I would have thought you would back your own team.
This is the thing, though. I have a history of bad predictions. I will never say England. You'll see that in a second as well. I'm not saying England are going to beat New Zealand. So with regards to the playoff picture, on Wednesday, the 10th of November, we have England taking on New Zealand in Abu Dhabi. And on Thursday, the 11th of November, we have Pakistan taking on Australia in Dubai, the Ring of Fire, with the final of the tournament taking place on Sunday, the 14th of November. Khalid, I want your predictions. England, New Zealand, we'll start with. Who do you think is going to win?
I'll have to say England. Abu Dhabi, for me, has been shown to be more of a betting wicket. Your betting lineup is just ridiculous. I think you can chase any total.
Well, we don't have Jason Roy, though.
So, like you guys have so much backup. It's ridiculous. You just need one of you guys to really just be in form. I mean, David Malan can open the batting. I mean, you can just move everybody up one. That's okay. I'm very confident. I just love the cricket that England play. It's just amazing, entertaining to watch. I'll never forget the game that in East London when we put up 190 and you can just ridiculous. I was just like, wow, it's just amazing. And when I see England, once you guys get going and you have and your mind is set on something, you just go for it. It's excellent to see you guys in action. So I'll have to say England's going to beat New Zealand because it's not going to be easy. I think New Zealand they always are going to surprise you. I mean, we could see what happened in the 2019 World Cup. So, and their bowling attack is just bloody ridiculous. I really think that Bolt and Saudi are two of my favorite bowlers around at the moment. I just think the accuracy, their ability to be able to read the opponent and what they're going to do before they... I've seen Trent Bolt change mid-air almost, what he's going to do. Before, as he comes to the crease, he reads the batter and the way the batter moves. So, I think he's excellent at that. On the other end, I think it's going to be Pakistan. I don't think Australia is as good as what they're making, as what they look. South Africa should have beaten them in the first game. I felt that South Africa didn't come to party and play the right cricket against them. They still look to me like a team that relies on an individual performance to drag them out of something. So David Warner will either do something like that David Warner did against the West Indies. He basically just single-handedly won them that game in a way. And their bowling unit, however, is very good. But I think that Babar Azam is practiced against one of the best left-arm seamers in the world. So I don't think Stark is going to bother him too much. I think he's faced enough in swinging yorkers in his lifetime in the nets to be able to know what Mitchell Stark is going to dish out to him. So, but Mitchell Stark hasn't really been the main threat. It's just Josh Hazlewood. It's how they play. Josh Hazlewood is going to be the thing, and Zampa. Mm-hmm. That's going to really be and whether your man is going to come to the party as well, Glenn Maxwell.
Oh, yeah.
RCB. I should say I'm man, because I'm also an RCB fan. Inverted commas, but I don't really watch it enough to be able to call myself a fanatic of RCB. I watch a games now and again when I have the opportunity, but that's my prediction. I think Pakistan in the final.
Oh, that's going to be interesting. In terms of my predictions, I do think Pakistan have got the beating of Australia, to be completely honest, which does make it interesting, because then that would mean they've won 6 out of 6 and they would be the favourites going into the final. In terms of that first semi-final, though, I'm really torn. I'm going to be honest, because New Zealand, everyone seems to have completely just discarded their chances. Everyone thought it was going to be India and Pakistan, myself included. I was guilty of it as well. And New Zealand have been outstanding. They really have. The likes of Martin Guptill, Devon Conway, Glenn Phillips as well. Daryl Mitchell opening the batting. What a revelation that's been. He's been fantastic, to be honest. Was in great form in the Super Smash and in the T20 Blast for Middlesex this season. But then again, England, we have got a fantastic team. I can't deny that. Jason Roy, I'm absolutely gutted for. I'd love to see him in this game. He's the kind of guy who, when he gets going, can change the game in an instant. If he scores 50 from 22 balls or something like that, the game's over. He is that kind of batsman when he gets going and gets into the flow of things. But we still have Joss Butler. We still have Liam Livingstone. I don't know exactly how England are going to manipulate the batting order, though, because we could move someone like Milan up to open, or Liam Livingston, or Johnny Bairstow. Personally speaking, I'd open with Bairstow. I'd go with Bairstow and Butler opening. Mm. But the key thing there, with the absence of Jason Roy, do England bolster the batting, or do we bolster the bowling? Do you slot Sam Billings into middle order, or just slot David Willian there? You would go Sam Billings.
I think your bowling is your weakest point. Mm. To be fair, I think that if you can out bat, you need to bat really well against New Zealand. If you can put pressure on the bowlers, then you win the game. If you can post a good toss, it depends what you. The toss is the main thing in this, obviously, in this World Cup. So it's going to be up to the batters to show what they can do. I do. Before I move on, I just want to say a shout out to Liam Livingston, though, because he's a real great guy. Like, I've got an opportunity to meet him as well when he played for the Blitz. And what stood out to me is a lot of the international players will be, you know, to their own devices. They will stay on their own corner and just hang out with the dressing room. He stood back after a presser to chat to a friend of mine and myself, and we had a long chat with him, and asked us about South Africa and told us about this and told us about England. We had a chat about United and Premier League football as well. Like, the county cricket as well, of course, and other things like as well. My friend is massively into that as well. So great guy. He really was excellent. Jason Roy, I want to also mention him because I'm worried about him to an extent, because this is now, I hope I know it's maybe a different injury to the one he had in the World Cup, but it's recurring injuries now. I was heartbroken when he was injured in the Mzansi Super League as well. When he came here, he was also injured and he missed a lot of the tournament. The World Cup, he also was injured for the majority of the World Cup and then came back towards the end. Now he's tournament. You could see how heartbroken and hurt he was when it happened to him. Now, I hope that he can get the treatment that he deserves, because he's an excellent talent and an excellent player. And I would like to see him obviously play more cricket than he has. He's been very unlucky with injuries. So best wishes to him as well.
Yeah, and I completely echo those words. Absolutely. Same with Tamal Mills as well. Tamal Mills, so unfortunate. And again, wishing those two a quick and full recovery with their respective injuries heading into the rest of 2021 and beyond. So in terms of our predictions, then we've got a Pakistan versus England final from Khalid. And from me, because I don't want to curse the Three Lions and a crown, I'm going to go New Zealand, Pakistan. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm hoping that my prediction's wrong, obviously, but we'll have to wait and see how that game pans out. Wednesday, the 10th of November at the Sheikh Zayed Stadium. May the best team win. May the best team win. That old adage. I think that's a fantastic way, to be honest, Khalid, to wrap up the podcast as well with those predictions. It was meant to be about 35, 40 minutes, but when us two get together, we always double that time. I think it's been about an hour and 15 to an hour and 20, but no issue with that at all. That's what we like. We love talking cricket here on the Counter Cricket Podcast. So just before we go then, Khalid, anything to just wrap up on? I know you've promoted CFM at the start of the show, but any links, anything like that?
Well, no, you can. I think I've mentioned all the links. You know, you can go to cricketfanaticsmag.com and basically that will direct you to everything that you need to know with regards to the magazine. And then just go to Cricket Fanatics Magazine YouTube. We need more subscribers there, guys. So please help us out there and share it with all your friends that are interested in South African cricket. We do chat. Sometimes Aaron comes on. We do chat England because I like to hear from other countries as well, what South Africa can learn from them. So it's for any person that loves cricket, but it's majority for people that love South African cricket. So if you love South African cricket, please subscribe to all of our platforms. Thanks a lot for having me as well, Aaron.
Oh, my pleasure, mate. My pleasure. To be fair, this is the first time, Khalid. I don't think it's going to be the last time that you appear on the Carrot Cricket Podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. And again, just for you wonderful listeners out there, please do go and subscribe to Cricket Fanatics Magazine. I write for them. I've done punditry as well on your live streams and the review shows as well. It's always a great, great laugh. Great bunch of people. Obviously headed by yourself, Khalid. I can't say enough good things, to be honest, about CFM. So I'll be leaving the links to those in the description. Please do go check them out. Subscribe to the YouTube channel and check out the magazine as well. There is an upcoming issue. I know about that after the T20 World Cup. So keep an eye out on that one. But that is it, pretty much it from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast for tonight's T20 World Cup episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.